Ohio and Kentucky political leaders appeared on stage at the Democratic National Convention this week in support of Kamala Harris for president. But one noted absence was U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today on our weekly news review, we'll talk about why the senior senator from Ohio chose to stick close to home. We'll also hear why Ohio's other U.S. Senator, J.D. Vance, is taking aim at Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear. And we'll discuss Joey Votto's retirement announcement with a Cincinnati Reds superfan. There's a lot to cover today, and here to get us started, our Ohio Public Media State House News Bureau reporter and producer, Joe Ingles. Welcome back, Joe. And USA Today Network Ohio Bureau reporter, Jesse Ballmer. Welcome back to you too, Jesse.
City.
Hey, Jesse, are you with us? Okay. Well, we're having all kinds of technical fun today. Hi, Joe.
Hi. How are you, Lucy?
I'm doing well. So, Joe, last week we talked about the ballot language for issue one, which Ohio voters will decide in November. The ballot board was meeting as our program began. Remind us briefly what issue one seeks to do.
Okay, so issue one would change, if it was approved, it would change the process for drawing the map for legislative districts and congressional districts. Now, Ohioans voted in 2015 and 2018 on the process that was used in the most current maps, but the group that's behind this new amendment say the lawmakers just ran over everything Ohioans approved. They abused the system. And so now they say the only way to really get good maps that are not gerrymandered is to take lawmakers out of the process and put citizens in its place with a citizen panel. So that's what this November amendment would do. It would take lawmakers out of the equation. It would establish a citizen-led panel that would draw the district maps for state House and Senate and congressional districts.
And Joe, I believe you were at that ballot board meeting last Friday. What summary language did the ballot board end up approving?
Well, it's a very controversial language. Even the title of it is different. It says, here's the title of it. It says, to create an appointed redistricting commission not elected by or subject to removal of the voters of the state. Now, this, as I just explained, the goal as the people who are bringing the amendment would say the goal is to take politicians out of this and to put citizens in charge. But if you read the tone of the summary, it's to take the, it sounds like it's taking the power away from citizens. And it reads that way the whole way through. And it goes into a part of the summary where it talks about the voter passed issues in 2015 and 2018, and it makes it sound as if voters passed that, it was, you know, bipartisan, and now this group's coming in and they want to take everything away. It's a different set of language than what is used, a different tone of language than what is in the actual amendment.
And Jesse, my understanding is that summary language is also a heck of a lot longer than what Citizens Not Politicians submitted, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's interesting. The amendment is long in part because it has to encapsulate everything that they would be removing from the Constitution from the 2015 and 2018 measures that Ohioans passed. So there's an argument about how lengthy, how much you should get involved in this ballot language. But for example, the definition of how the members of this 15-member commission would be selected with something like 26, 27 lines, one can assume there's a quicker way to get to that point.
Hmm. And now the group advocating for issue one, the Citizens Not Politicians group, is suing the ballot board over the language the board approved. Joe, explain why that is.
Well, they say that the language that the board approved is not at all truthful, that it's partisan, and therefore unconstitutional. The Constitution does say that the summary should be representative of the amendment itself. And they take issue with the current maps, you know, that are out there, if you listen to the language or read the language in the summary, it indicates that those are bipartisan maps, which is kind of half true, because the Democrats at that time did vote to go ahead and adopt the maps. But at the same time, they were saying that the reason they did that was that the process was so flawed and they wanted to put their effort into changing the process. And even Senate Minority Leader Nikki Antonio, she had said that the fear was that if they went further in the process, it could be worse. And she cited a conversation that she had with Senator Huffman kind of informally, where she was shown a map that could have taken the Senate Democrats down to 6. They're down to 7 now. You could fit all the Senate Democrats in a minivan right now. And so she was concerned that that could even go down to 6 if they would have stayed in there and not gone ahead and voted to end the process. So the while it is true that it is a bipartisan map, the two Democrats have been clear that the reason they voted to end it right there was they didn't want to see what came next.
And Joe, you talked about this a little bit before, but I just want to make clear, the Republicans on the ballot board and other Republican leaders, they're arguing that passage of Issue 1 would lead to more gerrymandering, aren't they?
Yeah, that's what they put in there. That it actually, the language says it would establish a new taxpayer-funded commission of appointees required to gerrymander. So it does, you know, when you read that summary, it is different than the actual amendment itself. But, you know, Lucy, it's not the first time that Ohioans have seen this, because last year, if you remember, on the abortion amendment in November, the summary language was very different than the amendment itself. And the amendment ended up winning regardless. So, you know, we'll see where this goes. It's now in front of the court. The court will decide it, and the ballot board may have to make some changes. Last time around, it was minor changes. Who knows what the ballot board's going to say this time around? But regardless of the language that's on there, there is a way to win, even if the language, you feel like the language is against you. And I think that's what Citizens Not Politicians is trying to do, is to get their message out that, hey, that ballot language is not representative of this amendment.
Jesse, how quickly could the Ohio Supreme Court decide this case? I mean, there's not a whole lot of time before some voting starts in Ohio, is there?
Yeah, they'll act fairly quickly on this. And as Joe said, similar challenge was brought to the language on the abortion rights measure last year. So what's interesting is the Ohio Supreme Court does have 4 Republicans, 3 Democrats, but the person you really want to watch is Justice Pat Fisher, who is not going to be able to run again because of age limits. And he has been not really a swing vote, but just kind of an interesting vote on the court recently.
Hmm. Okay, well, Joe, let's move to another legal challenge, and this relates to abortion. The ACLU of Ohio is suing over a state law that requires patients to wait at least 24 hours before they can get an abortion. What's the ACLU's legal argument there?
Well, they're saying that reproductive rights amendment that 57% of Ohio voters approved last November, that it spells out that the 24-hour waiting period, which has been on the books, is no longer constitutional, because the language in the amendment says that you cannot put up barriers to abortion. And they're making the case that the 24-hour, or they're trying to make the case that before the court, that the 24-hour period is a barrier to abortion. And so, you know, that's part of it. There's also a lot of questions about standing and other things that come into play.
Jesse, did the constitutional amendment that voters in Ohio passed last November, did it talk specifically about this waiting period?
It didn't. It's worth noting Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost, who's a Republican and interested in running for governor one day, he put out a memo before the election saying, if this passes, here are the laws that I think could be affected by this, included things like the ban on most abortions, about 6 weeks. Some people call it the heartbeat bill. But it included things like this 24-hour waiting period, which abortion providers would say often turns into more than 24 hours, because after your initial appointment, you have to wait at least 24 hours to get, you know, the second appointment after the consultation. And so if you don't live in this city, if it's a further transportation issue, if you have children or jobs or so forth, frequently the delay is more than 24 hours.
And so, Jesse, you mentioned that Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost had issued this memo before the vote. What is his office arguing in this case?
So his argument is that this isn't impacted by the measure that voters approved, that voters were focused on access to abortion, but they weren't trying to restrict reasonable safety measures surrounding abortion, which his argument is that this is a version of informed consent. The opponents would say that this kind of goes above and beyond other medical procedures. Like if you're going in for, I don't know, something else, you know, you probably want to be asked to wait 24 hours later and given materials about, you know, here are your options if you change your mind.
Mm-hmm. Joe, how quickly could this Franklin County judge rule on this case?
It could happen quickly. We're not really certain when this might come down. There are some other challenges in the court to abortion right now, one in the Hamilton County Court that should be coming out, should is the word in that sentence, be coming out next week. It's been kind of continued for a while. But this, you know, here's the thing with this abortion amendment. Every abortion law that the backers of the amendment think is unconstitutional, they're probably going to have to take them all to court, because the legislature is not coming back and getting rid of any of these things. And it's putting doctors in a position of having to, you know, try to play lawyer, which is never good when they try to do that. So, you know, that's where we stand right now with we're going to see, I think, more lawsuits come out on the abortion issue in the future, just because there seems to be a lot of clarity needed in the wake of this new amendment.
Mm-hmm. Jesse, you've been covering the DNC this week and reporting on the many Ohio Democrats who went to Chicago for the convention. One prominent Ohioan who was there is Dr. Amy Acton. What was she doing there?
Yeah, that was fascinating. She arrived on Tuesday and was really talking to other Democrats. She told reporters like myself and the others that were here that she is considering a run for governor. And that is interesting. She obviously kind of gained some popularity when she was the health director under Governor Mike DeWine at the beginning portions of the COVID-19 pandemic. And that gained her a lot of attention. Certainly proponents of hers found her to be a calming, reassuring figure at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, providing them like explanations of what was happening. But she also earned a lot of scorn from people who did not want to lock down schools, did not want to lock down businesses, you know, didn't feel like she was providing them the information accurately or in the right period of time. So she is certainly a figure that is well known in the state of Ohio, but also has no political experience. She's never been a politician, which can be a good or a bad thing, depending on your position.
Yeah. Well, and Joe, you know, she not only got scorned, but she got some violent threats before she left that job. Her name has been floated for political races in the past, hasn't it, Joe?
It has. It was thought that she might be a candidate for the U.S. Senate last time around. People had asked her, you know, will you run? And you know, in the end, she decided not to run for that. But, you know, here's the thing. When she was in the midst of all of the COVID controversy, she had armed people with guns outside her home protesting her. And I mean, that was a very uncomfortable position. And I think that, that kind of influenced how she looks at politics. But maybe now, the distance or maybe things have changed. I don't know. But, she seems more interested in it now than she was in the past, for sure.
Jesse, one high-profile Democrat who didn't go to the DNC this week was U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown. Doesn't he usually go to these conventions?
He does. And so it was notable that he wasn't there. And the reasons are kind of obvious. Ohio is expected to vote for Donald Trump as it did in the past two elections by 8 percentage points. And while there is enthusiasm for the Democratic nominee, Vice President Kamala Harris, especially in swing state polls, she's doing much better. That is perhaps not going to translate as well to Ohio. And so Senator Sherrod Brown really needs to make his race about Ohio, focusing on Ohio issues, and try to avoid, or at least just not focus on, the national issues. In contrast, Republican Bernie Moreno, who is running against Brown, is lesser known. He was the Trump-endorsed candidate in the Republican primary, and so he needs to make this race about the national support.
Well, and notably, Senator Brown, he's not campaigning with Vice President Kamala Harris either, right? Or he's not expected to?
He's not expected to. It could happen. I will say Kamala Harris probably isn't going to campaign much in Ohio. They have some ads up in the Toledo and Youngstown area, but that's more to attract votes from Michigan and Pennsylvania than it is to attract votes from Ohio.
Well, and you just mentioned that Republican candidate Bernie Moreno has a much more interest in kind of nationalizing this race. Talk a little bit more about that. Why is that? Why is that a better position for Moreno to be in?
Yeah, I would say Donald Trump-backed candidates have done really well in recent elections. It worked very well for J.D. Vance, whose claim to fame prior to that was being the hillbilly elegy author and, had done work in Silicon Valley, et cetera. And so that endorsement has been really powerful in the Republican primaries and really impactful in the general elections. And so really everything that you see him putting out has, I'm the Trump-backed candidate, it's on the bus, et cetera. And so if he can get kind of the support from that brand, and especially if Trump is running ahead in Ohio, that only helps him and only hurts Brown.
Joe, Senator Brown is getting some help with his campaign this week from a coalition of Ohio labor unions. I know the State House News Bureau reported on that. What are some of these unions doing to help Brown?
Well, they're providing ground support. They're providing the support that is needed, manpower, getting the message out. They're helping to get the message out to people, to their members. One of the things about Republicans in recent years is they've been able to capture some of those labor votes that they hadn't had for a long time. And President Trump has been able to get some union workers behind him. And in fact, we even saw at the Republican National Convention, we saw some labor leaders there. These are the people that Senator Brown has always had in his fold. He's always had a lot of labor, a lot of workers, people like that, unions. And so this coalition is trying to kind of herd all those people back in and get this message out that Senator Brown is the best candidate for laborers.
Do union members still have a lot of pull in Ohio, or unions in general, or do they still have a lot of political sway in the state, Joe?
Oh, heck yes. Heck yes. Actually, if you look at where really the Republicans have picked up that's made the biggest difference, arguably that would be up in the Youngstown area, where there's been a lot of emphasis on Lordstown, the jobs there. And we saw this week at the DNC, there were several times I saw Lordstown and the jobs and UAW and the picket line. All those things were mentioned this week at the DNC. And of course, you know, Senator Brown, he's always talking about those issues. So he wants to remind these labor unions that he's had their back, you know, that he's their man. At the same time, though, Bernie Moreno is trying to get those folks and you know, with President Trump, former President Trump, getting them in the past. A lot of them are already over in that corner now. So it's going to be, you know, really important to see how this union vote goes.
Yeah. Plenty to watch as we get closer to Election Day, that's for sure. I've been talking with Ohio Public Media State House News Bureau reporter and producer Joe Ingles and USA Today Network Ohio Bureau reporter Jesse Ballmer. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Have a good Friday.
You too. Up next, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear faces the wrath of Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance. We'll hear why. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, the vice presidential candidate on the Republican ticket, took aim at Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear this week, and Republicans in Kentucky and beyond echoed his anger. Joining me now to talk about Beshear's remarks and what happened afterwards are Kentucky Public Radio Capitol reporter Sylvia Goodman. Welcome back, Sylvia.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And Kentucky Lantern reporter McKenna Horsley. Thanks for being here, McKenna.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sylvia, as I mentioned, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear spoke at the Democratic National Convention. He spoke Monday during the first night of the convention. How big a deal was it for him to be on this national stage?
Well, I remember he announced that morning that he was going to be on the national stage at the first night of the convention. And I was wondering, oh, I wonder what time he'll go on. And he ended up going on a pretty primetime hours, not long before, not, you know, far apart from when President Joe Biden gave his address that first night. And he was introduced by Hadley Duvall, who is a reproductive rights activist here in Kentucky. She's well known for her sharing her story in support of Governor Andy Beshear in his reelection last year by describing the sexual abuse she faced as a child against her stepfather, and kind of using that as a launching point to discuss the need for exceptions for incest and rape, which do not exist in Kentucky, in Kentucky's abortion ban. Mm-hmm. And so she introduced him, and that was really the focus of his speech Monday night, talking about abortion rights, talking about, you know, referring to abortion bans across the country as, quote, like Trump's bans, and, you know, blaming Trump for Kentucky's ban, which I think, you know, there's some arguments to for and against, right? He elected the, I mean, elected, he selected the Supreme Court justices that did overturn the ban, but Kentucky already had those trigger laws in place. And, you know, there's clearly was continues to be support for it within the state legislature. But that was really the focus of his debate, of his speech, talking about abortion and the need to have a president who is supportive of abortion rights.
Yeah, that's been a big focus of this Democratic presidential campaign, pointing out that former President Trump appointed those Supreme Court justices who overturned Roe v. Wade and their Dobbs decision. McKenna, Governor Beshear spoke more about abortion rights Tuesday morning during a television interview and focused some comments directly at Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, who, as I mentioned, is the vice presidential nominee on the Republican ticket. What did he say about Senator Vance? Tell us about what went down there.
Yes. So the morning after he gave this speech at the Democratic National Convention, Andy Beshear appeared on MSNBC's Morning Joe, which is a it's a national television audience, particularly with people who are typically, their audience is typically more liberal and supports things like that. So he was kind of speaking to that crowd in that sense, but he did begin to speak about Vance's opinions on abortion and abortion access, which has kind of been a theme for him as well. And I'll get into that in a second. But on television, Andy Beshear said that he recalled some of Vance's comments about rape being, or pregnancy resulting from rape being inconvenient, and brought that up. And then he said that make him go through this, meaning that maybe as some Republicans are saying, that Vance should experience this in some way, or a member of his family. Quickly after that interview aired, Vance did take to X, or formerly Twitter, and asked why Bashir was wishing that a member of his family would be raped. And then that kind of conflict escalated to the Trump-Vance campaign and Republicans following suit, and then even Republicans in Kentucky jumping onto that and pushing that message out as well. Bashir did go on air again to kind of clarify his comments and respond to Vance's narrative on this. And he said that the insinuation that Bashir was wishing for this to happen was ridiculous and a deflection from talking about the policies that Vance supports.
Yes, I understand. Governor Bashir said, hey, what I meant was he's a man. He's never going to have to experience this kind of thing, and that he wouldn't wish, violence on anybody. But there were certainly some Kentucky Republicans who agreed with Senator Vance and really called out the governor for this, right?
Yes. The afternoon after this kind of exploded on social media, we heard from three GOP senators who are also women, Shelley Funky Frohmeyer, Adrian Southworth, and Lindsay Titchener. And they called on Bashir to, quote, put aside his shameless and embarrassing political ambitions and issue an unconditional apology to the Vance family and others who he may have inadvertently hurt by these comments. But in his remarks, kind of clarifying this, Bashir did kind of take it back to what he said in that speech about empathy. He did say that Vance, as a man, will never have to face any of this, but that he lacks empathy to be able to put himself in a different situation that he may not experience. So, but these two have kind of been fighting in the media since Bashir was on the short list for the Veep stakes of the Harris campaign. Ultimately, she did go with Governor Walz of Minnesota. But Bashir as Kentucky's governor and Vance with some of those Kentucky ties that he highlighted in the Hillbilly Elegy kind of pitted them together. And they've had feuds kind of in the media throughout this time.
Sylvia, let's circle back to Governor Bashir's speech at the DNC. What was his message regarding unity? He talked about abortion care access and unity, didn't he?
Yeah, he has emphasized that, I think, throughout his governorship and running for office here in Kentucky. You kind of have to emphasize unity and nonpartisanship when you're running in a state that has so overwhelmingly turned to Republicans, as a Democrat, I mean. And so, he's really emphasized that bipartisanship. He, referenced the big tent kind of metaphor in his speech and was saying that independents and Republicans have a place in the Democratic Party. And again, he's mentioned this many times before. It's kind of a common tagline of his to say that jobs aren't red or blue, bridges aren't red or blue. That's one of the things he often says, that, being an actual governor, actually running, a state or a country means you have to represent everybody. And so he kind of also went back to that at the Democratic National Convention, which, is kind of interesting. That's not necessarily the general vibe of the convention this year. There's a lot more partisan attacks this year. But he really took it back to the idea that there's a place for people who don't share the entire Democratic platform, but maybe has some shared values with the Democratic Party.
Well, and McKenna, you mentioned that Governor Bashir was considered to be on the short list before Vice President Kamala Harris picked Minnesota Governor Tim Walz to be her running mate. What has Governor Bashir said lately about larger political ambitions? I guess I'm wondering if this appearance at the DNC could mean the Democratic Party thinks he has a future beyond Kentucky politics.
Well, even before he was considered as a running mate for the Harris campaign, Bashir had taken some steps to raise his national profile, particularly after his successful reelection campaign in 2023. He has a PAC that is supporting political candidates across the country, and he's been visiting other Democratic parties in different states and things of that nature. So he has taken steps to do that. So that's something that it does seem that it's on his mind. When I asked him last week if he would be willing to do something like a cabinet position in the Harris campaign, he said that his focus is going to remain on Kentucky, but he is term limited in this role, so he cannot run for re-election for governor when this term ends. So if he wants to stay in politics, he has to look up for a higher office. Kentucky will likely have a Senate seat available if Mitch McConnell does not run for re-election. So some political observers are looking to that one in 2026. But it's Beshear has not indicated he wants to run for that, but a lot of people on the Democratic side believe that he is their best candidate for that position.
Well, Sylvia, I want to step away from the Democratic National Convention for a moment and talk about other news. The University of Kentucky president told his staff this week that UK would disband its Office for Institutional Diversity. Tell us about that. What was the rationale there?
Yeah, and that's been largely praised by Republican legislators. So in that letter that he sent to staff announcing that the Office of Institutional Diversity would be disbanded, the University of Kentucky president basically was saying that, you know, lawmakers have continued to bring these concerns to me, and they have made it clear to me that this is going to come up next year. So this year in Kentucky, there was multiple pieces of legislation filed, two primary ones, that would limit diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives at public universities in Kentucky. And those measures seemed like they were going to pass, or at least one of them that would have basically eliminated them at all public universities and colleges. But at the very last minute, it didn't pass. It seems to have been some disagreement between the two chambers in the Kentucky legislature. But it's been very clear that they don't intend to put down this issue. So it's come up in legislative committee hearings, and lawmakers are still clearly interested in it based on the kind of reaction we got from the UK's announcement. And essentially, they said that they would disband that office. They were not going to be eliminating any jobs, that those people would be given new jobs. They would reassess various titles at the university. So that implies to me that people with a diversity, for example, in their title might get a change to both the title and maybe their job description. They said they would be scrubbing their website and their official statements of what would appear like to be political stances. So they really seem like they're trying to, in some ways, appease the legislature to maybe even avoid, you know, legislation in the next session, to make this another big issue next session. You know, this year, major university presidents came out and spoke out against the legislation they were considering. You know, there was concerns about academic freedom being violated, things like that, free speech concerns. And so I think that that might be kind of part of what this whole trend is. And we'll see if other universities decide to follow suit.
Did UK's president say anything about whether this means diversity and inclusion are no longer priorities at UK?
You know, that's not what he said. He was kind of saying that they need to refocus what diversity and inclusion means. That was kind of my reading of that letter, that it was more about we need to focus on the broader community all fitting together, and that there was kind of following the, which is kind of a Republican talking point, that diversity is more divisive than it is, you know, inclusive, you know, whether you agree with that or not. And so that was kind of the message I was getting from that letter, that there's this idea that there needs to be refocusing around everyone being open to sharing their own voices and identities away from the classic DEI models that have kind of been in a lot of public universities and just generally universities.
And you said Republican lawmakers in particular reacted pretty positively to this, right?
Yeah, there is a lot of positivity saying that, you know, they're going to be watching UK to make sure they actually follow through. I believe that the chairman of the interim judiciary committee, I mean, not judiciary, interim education committee, that that UK's president would be coming, or UK staff would be coming, to the next committee hearing so they could check in on what that letter really meant and if they really followed through on it. So I'm sure we'll hear more about that, I believe, next month. But yeah, generally there was a lot of positivity that, you know, it looks like a university president is listening to their concerns.
Well, I've been talking with Kentucky Public Radio Capitol reporter Sylvia Goodman and Kentucky Lantern reporter McKenna Horsley. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Up next, former Reds first baseman Joey Votto announced his retirement this week. We'll talk with a super fan about why the news touched the hearts of so many Cincinnati fans. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joey Votto spent 17 seasons in a Cincinnati Reds uniform before leaving the team last year. Reds fans thought they might see him play as a Toronto Blue Jay this past week, but instead he announced his retirement. Joining me now to talk about that is WVXU senior political analyst and Cincinnati Reds superfan, Howard Wilkinson. Thanks for being here, Howard.
Well, thank you, Lucy.
It's always fun to talk to you about the Reds. Yeah. Where were you when you heard about Joey Votto's announcement? How did you hear about it?
Oh, I get, you know, multiple emails and stuff, you know, notices on my cell phone. I got something, you know, just popped up on the phone. You know, I said, yeah, I can't say I was surprised, because Joey's a guy that has a lot of pride in his work. And he always has always said that he would know when it was time. That, and clearly, when he was up in Buffalo, the AAA team for Toronto, it was clear he has run out of gas. Hmm. And rather than keep, you know, chasing a dream that's pretty much over, I mean, it was a great dream. It was a beautiful dream for a long, long time. But, you know, he's also a realist. He has said several times that in baseball and in everything, really, Father Time is undefeated. And that's the truth.
Yeah, very wise. Well, I want to ask you about the game at Great American Ballpark on September 24th, 2023. I believe you were there. That had to have come to mind immediately for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because that was when there were 31,191 people in the ballpark, including me. It was a game between the Pirates and the Reds. And in the eighth inning, Joey was playing first base, obviously, as he always did. He was playing first base. First three at-bats, he didn't do much. But when he got up for the fourth time in the eighth inning, he singled up the middle. Gets on first base. Everybody's cheering. And David Bell, the manager, pulled him out of the game and put in Stuart Fairchild as a pinch runner. And David Bell did that because he had a pretty good idea that this was going to be the end of Joey Votto as a Cincinnati Red. And he wanted to give Joey and the fans a chance to thank him. And when he pulled him out of the game and he went back into the dugout, every person in that ballpark was on their feet cheering, showing love for this guy. He had to come out several times and do,
encores.
Encores, yeah.
Yeah.
And wave to the crowd and express his love to them. And after the game, Jim Day, the sportscaster, interviewed him on the field, and they put it on the Great American Ballpark PA system.
Wow.
So everybody could hear it, and it just erupted again. And every one of us knew, and I certainly knew, that was it. We weren't going to see him again in a Cincinnati Reds uniform.
Very bittersweet moment, I'm sure.
It was.
So I mentioned you're a super fan, lifelong Reds fan.
Mm-hmm.
How would you rate Joey Votto's career in terms of how long you followed this team? Is he one of the greatest to ever wear the uniform?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. I think he's a Hall of Famer. We'll see. But I think he's in a Hall of Famer. He ranks up there with the Big Red Machine guys. He ranks up there with the guys from the 1939-1940 Reds. He's one of the best ever played in that uniform. And he will be remembered forever. Nobody, I can guarantee you one thing. Can't guarantee you about the Hall of Fame, but I can guarantee you this. No Cincinnati Red will ever wear that uniform number 19 again.
And why do you say that? You think they'll retire that number
retire
pretty quick?
Retire that number.
Yeah, yeah. And he deserves that, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they'll put it up on the wall along with the other 10 numbers in Red's history that have been retired. Mm.
Tell me, you mentioned Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. What makes you think he's a lock or should be in the Hall of Fame? I know you can't, it's hard to make those predictions, but what makes you think he should be there?
Well, you know, some Reds fans, you know, people debate about this, and people debate about it in baseball in general. You know, is he a Hall of Famer? And what I would ask people to do, baseball fans to do, is to take a look at the Todd Helton, first baseman for the Colorado Rockies, who was just inducted into the Hall of Fame, and look at Todd Helton's numbers. Todd Helton was a first baseman. He was a left-handed hitter, just like Joey. He did 17 years with the Rockies, and no other team like Joey did his entire career with the Reds. And if you look at their numbers, I would tell people, go to look at baseballreference.com and compare Todd Helton's numbers and Joey Votto's numbers. And you will see the striking similarities. And even some categories where Joey is ahead of Helton. Helton had more home runs, but Votto had more a much better on-base percentage. If you look at those numbers and you realize that just last month, Todd Helton was inducted into the Hall of Fame, the only conclusion you can draw is this guy, Votto, deserves to be there with him.
Hmm. When will he be eligible?
Well, you have to wait 5 years. Oh. So the earliest that he could be inducted would be the summer of 2029. So he's got to wait a little while. Yeah. That's fine. That's the way baseball works. You just have to wait and see if your career holds up and your numbers hold up over a few years.
Yeah. Do you think the Reds will ever have another player of that caliber spend an entire career with the team?
Well, it gets more and more difficult just because of free agency and the fact that clubs like the Reds, who are not the richest of the club, are probably not going to do many 10-year contracts in the future. And free agency is very tempting for a lot of these young players that they have right now. They have team control over them, you know, for 6 years. But, you know, beyond that, they're free to go. They're free to sign contracts with whoever they like. Joey was locked down into this long-term contract. It paid him $225 million. And that's the reason he stayed.
Yeah. That was a big deal when the Reds signed him into long contract for so much money. If you look back, and I know hindsight's 20/20, some people say, was it worth it? Do you think that was a good deal for the Reds?
Sure. Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, that's when you have a guy that you can build your team around of the caliber of Joey Votto, then, yeah, it's worth it. It means that you're going to surround him with players who are making a lot less money and are much younger. But you want a Joey there because he's not just a ball player. He's a teacher, and he teaches those young ball players. And you can go to the Reds clubhouse next week and ask some of those young guys that played with him, and they'll tell you, yeah, I learned a lot from this guy.
Let's talk about Joey Votto as a person, too. Yeah. Beyond his performance on the field, lots of people around here love him because of the kind of person he is.
Yeah, he is a very giving, caring person. He's a good man. He's done a lot for this community, particularly young people at the Reds Youth Academy. You know, he would show up there at any time to work with kids. And not just baseball skills, but life skills. And he didn't seek any publicity for it. And
This wasn't a photo op.
He was there when there were no cameras around. And he did this over and over and over again. And he did, you know, amazing amount of philanthropic work elsewhere in the city.
Yeah.
He cares about people. And he treats people with respect, particularly the people, young fans, you know, go around with the number 19 jerseys on their backs because they love him.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you're, of course, a bigger Reds fan than I am. You're a bigger Reds fan than almost anybody I know.
Yeah.
But when I was preparing for this, I understand that Joey Votto made a point of driving from Buffalo, where he had been with that, you know, minor league team, to Toronto, where the Reds were playing the Blue Jays, so he could see his friends and former teammates on the day of his announcement.
Sure.
I mean, that's pretty great, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that's Joey. I mean, you know, those people mean a lot to him, and he means a lot to them. And I know they appreciated it. You know, anytime they could see him, they were thinking that there was a possibility that he could be up with the Blue Jays during that series and play against them. And they were looking forward to that kind of reunion. And Joey knew that, and that's why he made that trip from Buffalo to Toronto.
Hmm. You think we'll see him back in Cincinnati anytime soon?
Yeah, but I don't expect, you know, a lot of people talk about him as a potential manager or a hitting coach or something like that. Well, I don't think that's going to happen. This is a Renaissance man. He has a lot of interests in the world, even beyond baseball. Baseball is his profession. I could see him, you know, maybe doing a part-time broadcast job in the TV booth. He did a lot of that when he was on the injured list last year and did a great job of it.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with WVXU senior political analyst and Cincinnati Reds superfan, Howard Wilkinson. Thanks so much for your time today, Howard. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Lucy.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening today, and I hope you all have a terrific weekend.